AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You are watching the Deadfoot Diver Podcast with Kurt the Deadfoot Diver.
Welcome to the Deadfoot Diver Podcast, where we talk about everything diving, tech diving, and especially the benefits of diving with disabilities. And today, I'm very pleased to have on the show somebody who I have looked up to for a long time, actually, because of his treasure hunting exploits, Daryl Miklos. How's it going from Cooper's Treasure?
It's going really well. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's an honor to meet you. I've been watching your stuff for ages. I've watched stuff of your dad's in the past and stuff like that and all his treasure expeditions. So why don't we start there and tell me how you got roped into this with your dad and the whole story, how it started with your treasure hunting career.
Well, growing up as a kid, in 1970, my dad decided to leave California and Laguna Beach and moved to Florida to try treasure hunting. And he was not too successful. He and my uncle tried to look for shipwrecks off the Cape Canaveral. We lived in Cocoa Beach at the time. And he ended up not being very successful finding shipwrecks until he was hired to locate spent booster rockets out there. And when he got the job looking for spent booster rockets, he just had to ID them, either put a buoy or a marker on them, or get some Loran readings on them. At the time, it was Loran. And then turn that information over. And if NASA retrieved it, he would get paid. But it was because of that he was able to find some shipwrecks out there. And I used to help him load the boat and asked if I could go. And I ended up stowing away one time. And he caught me and he threw me off the boat, and I was only seven. He threw you off the boat. Yeah, but luckily my uncle was there. He goes, if you can swim back, you can be a treasure hunter with me. And I swam back because my dad didn't know I could swim. And I swam back to the boat. My uncle pulled me out of the water and said, Roger, what the hell are you doing? Well, he's not supposed to be here and he's just going to fuck up the whole day. My dad swore every other word. And my uncle luckily just made him calm down, and I got to stay with him that day and never went out with him again there because my dad just didn't like kids. If it served his purpose of making him look like a good father or a good family man, that was the only reason he really liked kids. And so that's how it started. And then we ended up moving back to California after the earthquake happened in LA, I think in 71. It was a big earthquake and everything fell, and my mom's parents lived there and she was worried that they might be hurt because there was no communication. We moved back, and then my dad would just go back and forth and buy treasure from back then Mel Fisher. Mel Fisher used to own the 1715 fleet lease off of the Gold Coast there, Treasure Coast. And my dad would buy all the treasure that Mel could find and he would sell it in Los Angeles, and he became very well known for that. And he did the Merv Griffin show back in 77. Yeah, and Gordon Cooper was there. That was when I first met Gordon Cooper. Cooper was introduced to me in the green room in the back, and I would look up him and go, wow, that guy's an astronaut. I can't believe my dad's actually doing the same show with him. But they had something in common. They were both treasure hunters. Gordon was a treasure hunter before he actually even stepped into space. While he was training.
Really?
Yeah, while he was training to be an astronaut, they would go off the coast there and, you know, practice in the water. It was the closest thing to zero buoyancy without going into the real fancy machines and equipment. And he befriended Kip Wagner, and they became partners. And they started looking for shipwrecks together. And somehow my dad met Kip walking on the beach. And then he knew Gordon already, or heard of Gordon through his contractual arrangement with NASA to look for spent booster rockets off the Cape. And that's how that began. And then... my dad, as I got a little bit older, I was really into surfing, and I was a very good swimmer. And my dad needed somebody who he could trust, or so he said, that he could trust, and that somebody knew how to swim well. And he goes, look, Darryl, I'm going to take you. I'm going to pay you $1,500 a month. I'm going to pay for all your dive gear. We're going to go hunt for treasure. Are you game? And I go, I'll go with you if I can surf. So I brought my surfboard with me. And went out there, and we worked with, my dad had a separate lease out where Mel Fisher was looking, and there was a big controversy there, and there was a somewhat of a battle between my dad and Mel, who were friends for many years because my dad used to buy all the treasure and sell it for Mel. They were good friends for many years. And then that thing between them just came between their friendship, and they kind of parted ways, and my dad was unsuccessful keeping the lease in that area. I tried to take him to court, but eventually lost because the entire city of Key West was basically funding Mel Fisher's lease and his expeditions out there looking for the Atocha and the Santa Margarita, even though we believed we found the anchor to the Santa Margarita or the Atocha. I was actually the first person to touch one of those anchors.
Really?
Yeah, because my dad, one thing that most people don't know, they think of my dad as a treasure hunter, but he didn't know how to swim, and he had the biggest fear of water. So that's why he brought me as a treasure hunter with him, because he couldn't swim.
And so he was that terrified of the water?
He was horribly terrified of the water. One time we were in the Bahamas, I think, before we went out to work with Mel Fisher. I remember we found this wreck, and there was bronze cannons all over the place, and it was so beautiful. It was only like 30 feet of water, and I was going, Dad, you got to see this. It's so freaking amazing. Just look at it. Oh, my God, there's three bronze cannons. There's a ballast pile over there, and there's a famous wreck out there. And I said, Dad, are you going to come in and see this? I'll be there in a second. He's smoking his cigarettes, like his 50th cigarette by 10 a.m. in the morning, and finally, I said, Dad, you got to come out and see this. Are you crazy? We came all the way out here, and we finally found it. Don't you want to look at it? So my dad put on a mask and snorkel, because I was yelling that out in front of the rest of the crew, and they're probably going, yeah, Roger, why the fuck don't you want to come in the water and see this? My dad gets in the water, and he was literally shaking like this. And that's when I realized, oh, my God, my dad's afraid of water. I knew it.
He was shaking that bad.
He was shaking horrifically. He said he was cold, but the water wasn't cold. I was a surfer. I know people that are afraid of water. I know what it looks like.
And, yeah.
That's when I realized. I didn't say anything to anybody else. I'm sure some people noticed, but I never told anybody until later, decades later. When, you know,
you guys had like a very on and off relationship, you and your dad, didn't you, with treasure hunting?
Mostly off, sometimes on. But my dad just used me for whatever he needed me for. And because he ended up giving all my dive equipment to some other diver that he owed money to, and he never paid me. So I ended up not getting anything for the summers that I worked for my dad on the Atocha and Santa Margarita wrecks. And then we eventually moved to the Turks and Caicos in search of what my dad believed was the Pinta. the Columbus period wreck. And he had partnered John Gasquet and Olin Frick at the time, who were actually the people who discovered the wreck. My dad just jumped on board with them and promised to help them with the funding, and my dad was marketing it. And we actually found the shipwreck, and I know that that shipwreck was from the Columbus period. It was one of Columbus's wreck. I believe it to be the second or third voyage of Columbus, because if you follow the Spanish route, they always had to go through there, especially when they landed in Dominican Republic, and just north of Dominican Republic is Turks and Caicos. And they went around the Turks and Caicos through the channels and went all the way back to Spain. They would come back the same way. They call it the seven islands of the Babucas, or whatever it was, because there's seven islands in Turks and Caicos. And they lost several ships there. One I found on Cooper's Treasure, one I found in a different part of Turks and Caicos, and two in the southern part of Turks and Caicos. So four altogether.
Now, were all of those based on those maps that you got from Gordon Cooper?
Not everything. The initial part of it was Olin Frick and John Gasquet's, albeit Gordon had those on his maps. And however he got them, I have no idea. But he knew that there were shipwrecks there. Obviously, when you're flying in space, and if you either take a photograph and or if you had a magnetometer on the space capsule or spacecraft, you're not going to be able to go, oh, look, it even gives me the name of the ship. You're just going to get coordinates. You have to go and investigate it to find out. But yes, so half of the reason that I went back there after the fact was my relationship with Gordon Cooper, and he did indeed identify shipwrecks in that area. He just didn't know what they were. Most of the shipwrecks that Gordon identified were in the Bahamas.
Wow, which is amazing. I mean, how many have you so far off those charts he gave you actually identified as shipwrecks?
Oh, hundreds as shipwrecks. Now, whether we were able to bring up treasure on each one, no. Not every shipwreck was treasure laden. Every single shipwreck has some sort of treasure on it, whether it was either previously salvaged by the people who sank and it was shallow enough where they could get and rescue whatever things, their belongings, or other treasure hunters brought up some of the stuff after finding the shipwrecks. But we did find hundreds of shipwrecks. It's easy. They're everywhere. They're literally everywhere. And if you use common sense, any shallow reef in the Bahamas probably has a shipwreck on it.
Yeah. So what's the coolest thing you've found to date diving?
You know, everybody asks me that. It's probably my number one question and my number one answer, because got to give credit to her, my wife.
Okay, fair enough. Let's hear the story behind that.
But the artifact that I found was a 1,200-year-old Mayan pendant that belonged to a high priestess, and I found it on a 400-year-old Spanish shipwreck. So they didn't destroy it. They kept it. They thought it was interesting enough, because usually they would melt that stuff down and make ingots out of it, but this one wasn't. So it was really cool. It's kind of creepy. I always wanted to wear it because it was the coolest-looking pendant, and I just couldn't put it on. I don't know why, because it even had a Yeah, it had a hook on the back where you could run a line through it, a string through it. And I just,
really?
Yeah, I just felt bad.
So you never wore it?
I think I tried it on once, but I didn't walk around with it because it was the coolest artifact that I've ever found. To me, it was, you know, a gold pendant from a high priestess in the Mayan civilization.
Oh, yeah.
Found on an old Spanish shipwreck. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's pretty cool for sure. So tell me then, getting back to your wife now, since you let that out of it, tell me the story behind that. How's that your biggest treasure from diving?
Well, I got two beautiful daughters out of my relationship with my wife. I met her 26 years ago in Mexico City. And
where are you located right now?
I'm in Madrid.
Oh, okay. You're in Spain. Us. What are you doing?
AI agents are everywhere. automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Over in Spain right now.
Just doing a lot of homework and historical research and for a project that I hope to be able to explain to everybody in the near future.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So back to your wife then. Did you met your wife diving, I assume?
No. I met my wife. I took a break after my dad. He divorced my mom, left us kind of hanging, and I ended up reuniting with my father. There was like a 5-year gap where I never saw my father. He basically pretended to be dead and just disappeared. And I used to get creepy people looking for him when I lived in Laguna Beach. Limousine pulls up next to me. I was just fixing up my car. And this big old guy, about 6'6", 6'7", opens the front door of this limousine. He was armed. I could see a gun in a holster. He opens the back door. This other guy about my height comes out and he goes, "I want to know where your father Rosa Miklos is." And I go, "What the fuck is this?" And he goes, "Your father owes me money." And I'm going, "Look, I don't have any money. I have no idea where my dad is." And I go, "You can look at the shitty apartment I'm living in and my shitty car here." And I go, "If Eddie had any of his money, it's definitely, you would see it. I have no idea where he was." But I was shaking in my boots, and I had that happen to me several times. People looking for my father coming out of the woodwork. So my dad was on the run, definitely, hiding from people. And I think that guy, even though I sounded like I was doing a Russian accent, it was a bad German accent. He was looking for the U-boats at the time. He went back to Germany and he took some money from obviously this German man who said that my dad owed him over $1 million. And I was thinking, "Dad, that sounds like my dad. By the way, if you see him, can you tell him to give my mom some money? Because she's broke." You know, I even told him that. I said, "If you find him, let me know, because I'm looking for him too." So, and they finally let me go. But like I said, there was a few people who came after me or tried to, especially once I did Cooper's Treasure, people were do whatever they could to find me. People came out of the woodwork looking for my dad. And I just go, "Oh boy." And I finally got rid of all of them to say, "Look, I think my dad owed $50,000 in back rent to somebody." And this lady calls me out of the blue and says, "I'm looking for your dad. He owes me 50 grand. I go, "What does he owe you 50 grand for? He hasn't paid a rent in over a year." And I went, "Okay, that sounds like my dad." He goes, "I need you to figure out a way to get me my 50 grand. I go, "Lady, this is not me. Unless you got my name on a contract, I don't owe you anything. But I can tell you I don't know where he is. That's all I know. That's what he does. He runs and hides, and I don't know where my dad is." And she finally left me alone after a few phone calls looking for him. She tried to figure a way for me to pay her back. And I'm going, "I don't owe you any money. You don't have a rental agreement with me."
Wow. So these stories about him taking off with investors' money, that's like true stuff. That's not no exaggeration to it.
No. There's a whole slew of treasure hunters who do that. My dad was just a kingpin at it. You know, I think he invented it. Well, no, he was probably running with the crowd that did that, and he was good at it. But on the other hand, my dad was actually very talented for a guy who only made it to seventh grade. He couldn't really read. He couldn't write.
Really?
He couldn't swim. But he couldn't manage to convince everybody he was a fantastic treasure hunter. He always made up this story. I mean, because I remember people asking him, "How come we never see pictures of you diving in the water?" And he'd make up some fancy story. He'd go, "Oh, let me tell you about that one time I was down in the ocean and I went down about 50 feet and my compressor hose broke and I was like out of air and I thought I was going to die and drown. And ever since then, I've been really nervous. I just don't trust the equipment. I'm going, Dad, I think you saw that in a movie. And you just use that as your excuse. Because he's never, the only time I've ever seen my dad in the water is when I told him to go dive on that wreck that we found in the Caribbean and in a pool in our house in Santa Barbara where I saw my dad actually scuba diving, but he was in 3 feet of water. I've never seen that was the only time
that's I've ever the seen only time you've ever seen him scuba dive was in the pool in 3 feet of water.
Yep, on the shallow end of the pool.
Yeah, that's pretty funny for a treasure hunter.
But you know there's a lot of treasure hunters. You'd be surprised, there's some big name treasure hunters who don't dive. I really? Won't go say the names of the people because if they hear this, they're going to be pissed that I mention it. But I know two of them, two big name treasure hunters who will never set their foot in the water. They're just like my dad. They're good marketing skills. They're fancy with their tongue. They know exactly how to reel the investor in and sew that thing and sell them a bridge in Timbuktu. And they're really good at it. And so don't trust a treasure hunter that you find out can't swim. Yeah. The three that I know of are exact same personalities, and one of them's my dad. So the other two will go unnamed, but they're just like my father.
Really? That's very interesting. I didn't even think about that. But, I mean, it sort of makes sense because, I mean, you hear all the – especially if you've been involved in treasure hunting at all, you hear of all the stories of them scamming guys for investors for cash and all that to keep going.
There's nothing wrong with being a treasure hunter who can't swim. Just don't make everybody believe that you can swim. You know what I mean? I don't dive, but I sure the hell know how to run an expedition and a crew. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's just not sexy if you tell people you don't know how to swim.
So these other two guys, they don't know how to swim either.
Nope. I don't know if they don't know how to swim, but they don't dive. They don't know how to dive.
They don't dive.
Nope. And they're still alive and working it right now.
Interesting. So what happened with Cooper's Treasure anyways? Why has there been no more seasons? Because I've been dying to find out, like, what's going on with all these wrecks that you were finding.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because we were promised that we were going to get a minimum of 7 seasons, maybe 10. It's kind of sad because I think that show had a lot of legs to it. It really hit off with the public. Everybody loved it. It was a little bit higher budget than Discovery Channel wanted to pay for. Because ample entertainment, they didn't want to be cheap on it. They wanted to make it look good. And if you look at the way it was shot and filmed, it was actually really done well. It took almost 3 years to film those 2 seasons. It took 3 years of my life. And what happened was, is after Turks and Caicos, we moved to the Bahamas, and there was just problems with the government. Let's just put it that way. You know what I mean? Whether they wanted to continue to have the show shot in their country. And there was difficulties in working with particular people in the government. So the producers got tired. And so we moved to Honduras and we were going to shoot season 3 in Honduras. And we met with the president at the time's sister, who she was kind of like the gatekeeper. So any new projects had to be okayed by her before she would turn it over to her brother, the president, and have him sign it. And we pitched the idea. We showed her clips of season 1 and season 2, and she just loved it. She goes, this is fantastic, because I have plenty of shipwrecks down in Honduras that Gordon located. And she was super excited about it, so we went back to L.A. We got everything. We started doing pre-production, getting all the crews ready, trying to pick out the spots, and then one of the people from the office called and said, you're not going to believe it, to one of the executive producers, and said, we have some bad news. And we go, what's going on? The president's sister was killed in a helicopter crash. And that put the brakes on it. So then we tried to do it with Mexico, with a very well-known person through Televisa Television there. And we just couldn't get it done in time. And then Discovery Channel just said, threw their hands in there and said, well, it's got to happen on time. We're not going to wait any longer. And that's what happened.
Wow.
Nothing, because there's lots of rumors. Oh, the government shut you down because you found a spaceship from outer space. And that's another fake story. You know.
So what kind of resistance do you have by some of these governments when you go and you tell them that you want to go out and investigate shipwrecks?
Well, I guess one of them was, is, you know, in season one, when the good thing about season one of Cooper's Treasure, it showed the public a little bit of how difficult it was to actually obtain a lease and some of the legwork of what we had to do and wait for the paperwork and the permits and all that. In fact, what you saw on TV is a fraction, a very small fraction of the shit you have to go through to get a permit with these countries. And it's mainly that these countries don't trust treasure hunters, because most treasure hunters have a bad name just because there's a few bad apples. There's some good treasure hunters out there, but there's a few bad ones. And I know who they are. I know who it is and seen them, met them. And they ruin it for the rest of us. And then the academic people in this industry hate us. And it's easy for them because they're well-oiled, greased machines that are fully funded. And who better to, you know, put down than a treasure hunter? Because it's easy, because one guy does something bad, it's going to ring through, you know, like Tommy Thompson and... God, who was it? There was a guy that the people that put the moratorium in the Bahamas was because of Robert Marx. He never, I guess he absconded with treasure and never gave the Bahamian government with any. Robert Marx was like a badass treasure hunter, but he broke his contractual arrangement with the government. And so they put a moratorium in the Bahamas. And I was the first person to ever get a lease in the Bahamas to film Cooper's Treasure season two, since Robert Marx broke his arrangement with the government. They didn't trust anybody. I was the first person to actually get a salvage contract. Since then, there's been others, whom I'm friends with one of them, and he's really successful and he's doing really good. But I was the first guy after, what, since 1990?
Wow.
That got a lease to actually look for shipwrecks. So then what happens when they put moratoriums in place, people just start stealing treasure.
You know? Yeah.
And that's what's happening. And those stories get out and it makes us all look bad. And I get it. I get it. But the academic and the scientific people even will never work with treasure hunters. I tried to bridge that gap. I figured, you know, okay, so I've done Cooper's Treasure. I think people could see that I'm pretty forthright. I'm not out to steal. And, you know, I made it public and told everybody you could watch what we're doing on TV. If you didn't like what we did everything by the book. We did use the right procedures to bring up shipwreck material. Turned in the proper reports, had the right archaeologist, Jim Sinclair, respected people that worked with us. And when I approached UNESCO or an academic organization, actually, because UNESCO hates us, we're their number one enemy. But I approached an academic organization. I said, look, I've got Cooper's maps. I know where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of shipwrecks. Why don't we work together? We'll pick an area in the Caribbean. We'll dedicate that. You get the funding. And I will tell you where all these shipwrecks are. All I want is the credit and the ability to work together hand in hand with you so we can break this stigma of...
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
the academic and scientific community working against treasure hunters and vice versa. And when I talk to these people, I wish I could say his name. Boy, I wish I could say his name because he's very well known. And I said, he told me, he goes, you know, Daryl, I would love to do that. I would do nothing would be better than working with an honest treasure hunter like you, especially given that you have all this information that anybody would give their left arm for. But if I do that, I've broken the code and I will be fired and I will be blacklisted just like you are. And so he said he couldn't. And then he would never have that conversation publicly. He would never say that publicly. And I've never called him on it and said, hey, you know what he told me? Because then that's just hearsay. Yeah. But it's true. They don't want to do that. They will be blackballed from ever working for organizations like UNESCO or any academic marine archaeology firm or whatever. So they'll never be compatible. And it's even getting further and further apart. That gap is growing every day. And I believe that treasure hunting or getting permits to do treasure hunting will probably disappear. If I said it 3 years ago that it might take 10 years, so I figure we got another 7 years before they fully ban it. And then it's just going to be rogue warfare. People are just going to be stealing shipwrecks. A lot of people already are in a lot of different places. And that's just what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Same thing here in Ontario where I am. I mean, everything's supposed to be protected, but stuff gets stolen. I mean, that is one of the reasons that I don't agree with, like, our government has this attitude, whatever's on there, you leave it on there, you don't get to touch it, period. Which is fine if you're an honest shipwreck guy who's not going out and stealing stuff, but unfortunately, as you know, there are all these bad apples who do go and steal stuff.
Well, it doesn't even make any sense. Like UNESCO's thing is, they always told people, or tell people, the in situ preservation. You know what that means, right? Wherever it sank, leave it there in situ preservation. And I always go up to those guys and go, just tell me something, anything except for gold. What is being preserved in the salt water in shallow reefs? How do you call that preservation? How can you not tell the story? Unless you are going to go out there to every single wreck site that I can point out to you and actually save those wrecks, that's not preservation. That's degradation. And you're losing that historical content that could be shared with the rest of the world. So you're basically telling, because you can't do it, nobody can do it. If you can't do it, nobody's going to do it. And that's basically what it is. That's basically what they're doing. They're controlling. They want total control. And it makes zero sense to leave anything that's 400 or 500 years old, even 300, even 200 years old, anything of iron in the water, salt water especially, and expect that to be a place of preservation is just absolutely stupid. And they know it, but they won't say it.
Yep. It's absolutely ridiculous. I totally agree with you that their attitude sucks on that and they need to change it because it's going to go to waste. I mean, the ocean's going to claim it back. Well, and then nobody's going
to get it. The proof is in the pudding. I was willing to donate 100 wreck sites. I didn't know which ones had treasure and which ones didn't, but I said, I got 100 wreck sites. I will give you the GPS coordinate. You could go find them tomorrow. Put it in your navigation software. Take the boat right there. Dive on it. There's a shipwreck. Go do something about it. All I want is recognition to be allowed to work with somebody like yourselves. Nope. They would. And then there's people that have actually said, in fact, there's a guy who took away the lease from my father in the Turks and Caicos, he said, I would rather treasures and shipwrecks rot at the bottom of the sea than to work together with a treasure hunter. And he put that in writing, and that's Googleable.
Wow. Yeah, it's not good. And I mean, it's not like you've had, like, you had Jim Sinclair, who worked on the Atosha and stuff like that, working with you as well. So it's not like you haven't had guys who know their stuff.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's like, you know, Mel Fisher had those people. 1715 Fleet had those people. There's a lot of really well-oiled organizations in the private sector as far as treasure hunters go that did really good jobs. And if you think about it, marine archaeology didn't become famous on its own back in the 50s. It wasn't until people like us and people, my predecessors, who actually started this, that made marine archaeology what it is today. But yep. It's funny because these people, I remember one of them saying that we can never share treasure because it would be against our code of ethics, because you're profiting from the loss of treasure from Spain or wherever the material came from. And I said, so you get to do it. Who's paying you? You're getting grants, so you're making a profit. You're getting a well-oiled, funded machine to go and buy boats, buy equipment, pay crew, go down there, pay a lab to clean all the artifacts. So who's benefiting from it? There's a profit in there somewhere. It's either gives recognition to the university that's doing it, like Texas A&M, or any government organization. You're getting funding. You are making money profiting off of marine archaeology. You're no different than a treasure hunter. Absolutely no different. Because every artifact in gold coin or silver coin or artifact of precious stones or metals you guys bring up, somebody's profiting from it. Either the museum that you sell it to or donate it to, as long as they give you kickbacks for more treasure hunts. I don't see what the difference is. You're making money. Everybody's making money, because if nobody was making money, nobody would do treasure hunting, not even a Texas A&M or UNESCO or anybody. There's money in it to be made, and they've got plenty of it.
Yeah. I mean, I never even thought about that actually until you mentioned that about, you know, even the researchers, they're making money as well from all their grants and stuff like that. So it's,
of course. Yeah, millions of dollars. Who's getting that money? Who's paying for the corner office in the university? Who's giving them a company car? Who's covering their flights and hotels? And hey, that stuff ain't free. Somebody's paying you. So if you're saying you don't profit from it, the words are leaving your lips and you're lying every time you open your mouth to me.
Yep. So tell me a bit about your Nazi U-boat hunting, and if you found any real cool Nazi treasure.
Well, did you watch the U-boat show?
I have not had a chance to watch it yet.
Okay, well, it's kind of self-explanatory. Basically, when we were looking for the Columbus shipwreck in the Turks and Caicos, I stumbled across something that when I was spearfishing out in the middle of the Caribbean, and I noticed something that looked like I was shooting a fish with my sling. I lost it. It landed on a big metal ship. I swam down to pick it up, and I looked at what it landed on. It looked like this huge, huge barge, and I go, oh my God, what the frick is that? Had huge propellers on me, just massive. And it just stunned me, because I'd never seen any modern wreckage like that. And I was being followed by a hammerhead shark, because the fish I was catching was, you know, you clip whatever you catch to your weight belt,
yeah,
or your belt, whatever you're wearing to catch, to save the fishing and bring it on board. Well, that hammerhead was following me, and I got scared to death, and I was letting the fish go because he was getting too close to me. That's what made me lose my sling. I found out what I told my dad what I saw when I got back to the boat, and he goes, we ain't here to go fucking looking for modern shipwrecks, you piece of shit. Now get in the car, get back in there, and we came here to find old shipwrecks. Don't waste my time with these stories of modern shipwrecks. I don't give a shit what I was saying. That's the way my dad talked to me. He was angry at everything. He just, every other word in his mouth was swear words, and he was just angry all the time. And I said, okay, whatever. And you know, he also had a girlfriend while he was still married to my mom on that boat. And that was another bad thing he did. But anyway, I hated my dad at that moment. He hated me because I knew about his girlfriend. I said, well, then why am I here if you don't want me to see your girlfriend? And I ain't gonna lie. I wasn't going to lie for him. So anyway, whole thing was horrible. So I went back to California, when I came back a couple weeks later, my dad goes, Daryl, you don't know what, you remember when you came back to the boat one time and you told me you found this modern shipwreck and I told you to go fuck off and get off the boat and whatever. And I went, yeah, Dad, how could I forget? Those were such nice words. And he goes, well, you don't know what you found. You found a goddamn U-boat, you son of a bitch. And I go, what are you talking about, a U-boat? You mean Nazi stuff? Yeah, goddamn German Nazi U-boat. We're leaving here and we're going to go find that fucking U-boat. We're on a new venture. And they go, so just like that, we're going to stop treasure hunting and go up looking for U-boats. That's how it started. But the story has it is he found it. There was another story that he did a show called Hunting History, and it was on History Channel. But in there, because my dad had already died when they filmed it, they just showed flashbacks of my dad. But in the flashbacks, my dad said that he went down and he found this, and he dove down 80 feet. He went out on his own. He used to tell everybody, I went out on a skiff and I dove down 80 feet to go see this U-boat. First off, it wasn't 80 feet underwater. Second off, my dad didn't dive, so I knew that was full of shit. Secondly, 80 feet free diving? And he goes, you should have seen it. It said Hamburg, 1944.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, yeah. So first off, you don't dive. I can't even free dive 80 feet. And identify the emblem on top of the helm or the, it's just so ridiculous. And so he sold that idea to everybody. And I said, okay, so you're not going to tell people that I found it. Well, you didn't tell me what it was. And you didn't know what it was. I said, I know, but you wouldn't have known what it was had I told you where it was. And you wouldn't have known what it was had I not told you where it was. And he just ran with that story. And in that first show, it's not their fault because he lied to the History Channel and said that he found it. But he left me out of that thing. So I went and told my own story to History Channel and produced the show that I did. Got to tell a little bit about that and another location in the Dominican Republic where I was given a map or a chart from a World War II pilot that supposedly had locations of 7 missing U-boats. And that's
wow.
On the Lost U-Boats of World War II on History Channel. Only lasted one season, but it's there. You can watch it.
Yeah, I plan on checking it out. I've been trying to get it up here, but our streaming on what we can, of all the things that our government has decided to have a pissing match over, is all the media stuff.
Yeah.
And they canceled our History Channel up here. Mm. We can't even get the History Channel.
Yeah.
So it's a pain in the butt. And that was my most watched channel load of anything.
Well, you can watch some clips on YouTube, or you know, there's other means where you can at least see clips of it.
I've seen some clips of it. So
yeah.
So tell me, so are you going to be doing any more Nazi treasure hunting stuff?
I may be doing something related to that, but I'm currently putting together a project. Looking for shipwrecks, several that I've found where I know treasure to be, and I'm going to follow up on that first just because it's what I do best and the areas where I believe there to be U-boats is, it's just a lot harder and a lot more work and expensive to do, but I'm not going to give up on that either. As long as I'm young enough and healthy enough to do this, I'm going to keep doing it, so.
Which, how old are you now?
I'm old. How old are you?
I just turned 56.
Okay, I'm 62.
And I said, okay, so you're a bit older than me. Not much, though.
Well, 6 years. Wait till you see what you feel like in 6 years. I wish I
Are you kidding? Obviously, you haven't read my bio on my channel because I'm like full of titanium. I don't move well.
Okay.
Well, then you can, I have.
You couldn't bid metal detect because you'd be making the whole thing go off, right?
Oh, no, I can metal detect. I could still metal detect.
No, I know.
I as long as I'm holding, I have a metal detector. As long as I'm holding the wand away from my body, I'm good.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you need an extra spare diver for a week or so, I would love to come down and like help you treasure dive. No problem. I would hop on a flight.
Okay. Well, I'll keep you in mind. And seriously.
All right. I would. I would do it in a heartbeat again. It is the coolest thing that I've ever done in my life. That is for sure.
Yeah. 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 We got to get all this done before, you know, because when I think about, I did Cooper's Treasure, started that about 8 years ago, and how time flies. It's flying by.
Yeah. You know, I know. Flying. It's been that long.
Yeah. It's been so long. Well, that's when it first started. It took 3 years to do it, but it's just, time is just going by way too fast.
So do your daughters or your wife dive?
No, not particularly. My oldest daughter, she dives a little. They're both like fish out of water. They can swim fantastically. But to get them involved, everybody asks me that. I feel bad because my daughters go, yeah, how come you never took us? Do you know what it's like to have a young girl on a boat with a bunch of dirty old men? No, I'm sorry. Ain't going to happen. Nope, sorry. Especially in this environment. And it is what it is. And the people I work with are honorable. So I'm just kind of saying that as a joke. But the industry in itself, I just want my girls to pursue their own dream. I don't want them to get caught up in this and say, oh my God, that was amazing. Dad, I want to go be a treasure hunter because I already know there's no future in this. And I think I'm probably the last generation that this will survive before they blackball it everywhere in the world. And UNESCO and these academic organizations control the entire planet and historical artifacts associated with the early colonial period. It's going to be under their control. And that is going to happen. And I surely don't want them to start stealing stuff for, you know. So my daughters are doing their own thing, and I encourage them to do that. And they live vicariously through me, and I'd rather have it that way than, you know, drag them into this.
So what about your wife's point of view on some of the dangerous situations that you've been pulled in with due to your dad?
Nobody likes it. No one likes it. My daughters always tell me, like, they know I'm going to be starting a new expedition, and they always go, Daryl, are you diving deep? Is it dangerous? Are you going to be the only one down there? Who's going with you? And I worry about what they worry about, you know, because it's not for them. It's always in the back of the mind. Something could go wrong, and it's true, but it's like anything you do.
Yeah.
You know, as I get older, I take less risks. So, and you know, luckily for me, I'm mostly diving in shallow water. I don't do deep water wrecks. I'm not into going down into submersibles and diving, you know, 600 feet. And it's just not my thing. Albeit I've done dives in submersibles and it was really cool to do. It's just not what I'm into. I'd rather do the low hanging fruit, if you would say. You know, there's a lot more shipwrecks in shallow water than there are in deep water.
Well, especially down in the Bahamas and Florida and stuff.
Well, you know, Bahamas, it's a bastard. The Bahama is the bastardization of the Spanish phrase Bahamars, which means low seas.
Ah.
Yeah. So it's a Spanish word, Bahama. They're telling Bahama. It means low seas, shallow water. And that's where Bahamas got its name, Bahamas.
I did not know that.
Yep.
I actually went to the Bahamas for the first time in April. I did a Blackbeard's cruise. And the entire time I was there, I'm not going to lie, every single dive, I was keeping my eye out in case I see a glint of gold or something, right?
Yeah.
So, But yeah, it was really cool. I felt like I was in the Pirates of the Caribbean half the time down there. So.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun place to go. It's beautiful. And, you know, I guess it's not as it doesn't have the woohoo factor, wow factor for me anymore because I've been to both of them so many times, albeit there's some remote places. I like the remote islands and the remote places in wherever it is in the Caribbean. I'd much rather be there than where all the tourists go. Because it takes away all the fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
what was? Where's your favorite place to dive that you've ever dove?
There's been places in Mexico that I think are fascinating. You know, Cozumel and
Cozumel. Yep.
Turks and Caicos has got some fabulous water, and the Bahamas too. You know, like I say, it's all in the same region, kind of, and it all. It's just the visibility. Like, I feel sorry for the blokes that are doing the 1715 fleet, which I've done before. I did that when I was 14 with my father, because again, he couldn't dive, so he sent me in the water. And that's shallow water, but your visibility, you're lucky if you get 6 feet. Lucky if you get 6 feet. On a fabulous day, you're getting 10 feet visibility. And it's just, it stinks. I don't like that kind of treasure hunting. I'm spoiled in that respect because I get clear water diving. And the guys that work with me, I know that there was a guy that did Cooper's Treasure with me named Eric Schmidt, and he had really never dove in clear water until he did Cooper's Treasure. And when he did that, he goes, oh, my God, this is absolutely amazing. Because you can see 150 feet in front of you and 350 feet below you. You know what I mean? It's like, that's visibility.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Bahamas, the visibility is amazing. I mean, that was the first time I started diving again last year for the first time. I started diving in like 27 years. And we went to Jamaica last year, and then I went to the Bahamas. But where I first put on tank again was actually in Cozumel. So but I did not get out of the pool. It was a strange situation. We actually got there the first day. I got some bad Mexican eye drops, and I blew up like I was in a bar fight.
Oh, wow.
From this stuff. And I actually have pictures of it somewhere. Maybe I'll post it on here with it. And so I waited to go out, and the day I went to go snorkeling, 2 days before I left, there was a lady who was disabled. And I mean, she was in a walker. They had to help her on the boat and stuff like that. And the whole time I was watching her, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely in a lot better shape than that. I mean, I can definitely dive still. And they didn't say I couldn't. Mm-hmm. My wife's like, throw a tank on tomorrow. And I'm lucky because she has also been a diver. She can't dive now because she got COVID and she's got asthma. But yeah, as soon as she seen the look on my face after getting out of the pool again, she's like, yeah, you're going diving.
Yeah, cool.
So, and I have not looked back since.
Nice. Your wife still has COVID?
She has asthma from COVID. Yeah.
Oh, really?
It totally messed up her lungs. My stepdaughter actually has, she's 30. She's actually disabled now. She got two COVID vaccines, and on the second COVID vaccine, she had asthma before, but it was very manageable and controlled. And it just went totally out of control after the second shot that she had.
Well, I ain't going to go down that road, but.
Yeah.
Not me.
No, I know. So, and then my wife, she ended up getting, we both got COVID, and her lungs, it just messed her up really bad. She can't even, she's on 3 puffers a day.
Really?
So, yeah. Oh, well. Which totally sucks because I would have an awesome dive partner if she wasn't, and I would never have any trouble of getting somebody to go. So
that's too bad. God, sorry to hear that. Yeah.
But It happens. I mean, unfortunately, it's one of those things that has plagued a lot of people. Actually, one of her best friends with actually too, his lungs from COVID. Same thing. He can't. He used to do a lot of free diving. He can't free dive.
Well,
so now you were saying about COVID the free dive.
Nothing happened to me.
Yeah, I'm fine. I had it. I had it like three or four times. I didn't have any issues with it.
Yeah.
I had bad symptoms the first time because it was before the COVID shot came out, but yeah, I managed to be okay from it. So, so tell me, what other cool projects you got coming up here in the next while that you're working on, or is there anything you can divulge?
It's somewhere in the Caribbean, and I'm going to divulge it in the next few months, and people will be able to hear about it and see it. I'm planning on doing my own production about it and filming it and recording everything that we do and put something together either on YouTube or something like that, because network TVs just doesn't have broad enough audience for me. I want people to... Because the younger audience don't watch Discovery Channel and History Channel anymore. I want to introduce what it is that I do before I get too old and nobody wants to look at an old man anymore on TV or on being recorded. And, you know, the only way you're going to access them is to, like, YouTube or something like that. And doing, you have to go where they go. And if you don't, you're going to be left in the dust, because no one in my family, as far as kids are concerned with it, or my nephews or nieces, no one watches television, regular TV anymore. Nobody. It's a dinosaur, and it's dying.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's streaming or doing the social networking, and people are much more interested in that. So if you don't follow that, then you're just going to go down with the rest of it, unless... You know, not that I loved working with History Channel and Discovery Channel. I'm not complaining. I enjoyed myself, but also you get more creative control when you do things on your own.
Yeah. Which is true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Daryl, for coming on today. It has been awesome to have you on the Deadfoot Diver podcast. I really appreciate it. It has been a total pleasure meeting you.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me, and text me your phone number so I can keep in contact.
I will. Absolutely. And remember, everybody, keep diving and grab an adventure and live. And watch us next time on the Deadfoot Diver podcast.